Welcome to the Town Hall Review, brought to you by the Salem Media Group. I'm Mark Davis, filling in for Hugh Hewitt. So is billionaire Donald Trump really going to be the Republican nominee for President of the United States?
Trump is two primaries away from really locking up the nomination.
Mark Thiessen weighs in.
I was talking to a Democratic strategist there who said, we can beat Ted Cruz, we can beat Donald Trump, we can beat Bush, we can beat Kasich, we can't beat Marco Rubio.
As does Bill Kristol.
I'm pretty skeptical about Trump's chances. I just think, in general, I mean, he has shown some appeal, ability to appeal to independents, obviously, at this point, but I just think a lot of voters, when they really think hard about it, will think he's just not the right guy to be president. So I'm very pessimistic about Trump's chances to beat Hillary.
And later, Michael Medved asks an important question of Trump supporters.
Tell me what I should expect if your dream comes true and there's a Trump presidency.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Davis from 660 AM The Answer in Dallas-Fort Worth, sitting in for Hugh Hewitt. It's great to be with you. On Tuesday this week, Donald Trump walloped his competition in the state of Nevada. I guess it shouldn't be a surprise. After all, that's a 64-story building with his name on it in the signature city of Las Vegas.
We love Nevada. We love Nevada.
After expressing his deep appreciation for Nevada, he set his sights on Super Tuesday.
And we've had some great numbers coming out of Texas. And amazing numbers coming out of Tennessee and Georgia and Arkansas. And then in a couple of weeks later, Florida. We love Florida.
The morning after his big win, Weekly Standard executive editor Fred Barnes joined Morning in America's Bill Bennett.
Well, is Trump going to be the nominee?
Well, he gets closer every week. This was an impressive performance in Nevada. I think we have to admit that. He beat the 40% ceiling that he supposedly had, got 46%. And there weren't many silver linings for any of the other candidates. Rubio did win the late deciding vote, which is something. Cruz didn't seem to get anywhere, came in third, and lost the evangelical vote, if you believe this entrance poll that was taken, by 17 points to Donald Trump. So here's one way to look at it, Bill, and that is that Trump is two primaries away from really locking up the nomination. The first would be next week in Texas, where Cruz has to win. If Trump beats Cruz in Texas, there is only one poll that I've seen, a recent poll done by the University of Texas, that showed Cruz ahead by about 8 points. If Trump wins there and then wins in Florida over Rubio on March 15th, what's left for the other candidates? Nothing.
But let's just stay with that for a second. Supposing Rubio wins in Florida, Cruz wins in Texas, but in terms of the other states, Trump mostly wins.
Well, that would be that would rejuvenate both of them. I think winning in your home state is something you have to do, but those are big and important states. So that would keep both of them in the race. I mean, that has a downside of its own, and that is it would prevent the non-Trump candidates from consolidating behind somebody like Rubio, who I happen to think has the best chance of winning in November against Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders.
Let's go to cut number two just real quickly. Go ahead.
Okay.
So tonight we had 45-46%, and tomorrow you'll be hearing, you know, if they could just take the other candidates and add them up. And if you could add them up, because, you know, the other candidates amount to 55%. So if they could just add, they keep forgetting that when people drop out, we're going to get a lot of votes.
Right.
You know, they keep forgetting. Right. They don't say it.
There's the classic Socratic technique, mastered by Donald Trump. But what about
that?
Yeah,
but I think he's right on that point.
He is right on it, isn't he?
Yeah. But so, look, he's in command. It is amazing. And, I mean, to do so much better, to win the Hispanic vote, he got 44% of it. And the evangelical vote, I mean, people are learning about evangelicals. And there are many people who, if you ask what their faith is, are you an evangelical Christian, they'll say yes. I mean, I would say that. But then, you know, I'm lots of other things, too.
Right. No, exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Trump is a conservative?
Well, he's certainly conservative in temperament, and he's conservative on a couple of issues. He has a pretty good tax plan. Would reduce the top rate to 25%, cut the business rate, and so on. It's actually a pretty good plan. I was talking to Larry Kudlow about it yesterday. He likes it. But, you know, it's getting pretty slim after that. He says he'd get rid of Obamacare. But what would he do? You know, he said he likes a single-payer plan. Does he want to go to that? He said he likes the individual mandate that's in Obamacare. You know, I think after the tax plan, you find very few things on which he is conservative.
For the second state in a row, Ted Cruz finished a very close third, just a hair behind Marco Rubio. In the midst of the vote, the senator from Texas was dealing with controversy within his campaign, and he spoke about it with Hugh Hewitt.
You had to fire Rick Tyler, and is that Caesar's wife? Is that why you have to do it? Because they've built this narrative, and Rick Tyler's mistake of posting that fed into it?
No, it was, look, that was unfortunate that had to occur. Rick is a good man, and he has done, he's worked hard on this campaign. But Rick forwarded on social media a story that was written in the press that falsely attributed some negative sentiments by Marco Rubio about the Bible. And it turned out the story was false. But even more fundamentally, even if the story was true, we shouldn't be forwarding it on. From the very beginning of this campaign, I told every member of this campaign, we are going to run this campaign with the highest level of integrity. It doesn't matter if others engage in attacks, if others engage in insults. We are not going to go personal. We're going to stay focused on issues and substance. And we are not going to impugn the faith of any candidate, and that unfortunately is what this tweet did, is impugned Marco's faith. That was wrong, and it's not something that the campaign is going to tolerate. It wasn't done maliciously, but it was a serious error of judgment, and that's why I asked for his resignation, because that is not conduct that will be tolerated on our campaign.
Now, I had intended today to talk to you about the Supreme Court, but I'm caught in a process story. I hate process stories, but I have to ask it to you now. When they build a narrative about your campaign, your opponents build a narrative and you build narratives, and then your campaign communication director steps on the narrative and reinforces it, how do you get out of that narrative, Ted Cruz?
You know, listen, I think the American people are a lot wiser than many of the political folks give them credit. I think the American people are focused on substance and issues. They recognize. So let's go back, for example, to the last debate last Saturday. At that debate, I said on the stand that Donald Trump's, for the first 60 years of his life, had described himself as very pro-choice, had supported partial birth abortion, and even today he still supports taxpayer funding for Planned Parenthood. Now, Donald's reaction was simply to bellow, liar, liar. And he said, when did I ever say that? And my response on the stage was, well, you said it when I was leading the fight to defund Planned Parenthood. You publicly came out against it. And you said you thought Planned Parenthood did wonderful things. And then you'll recall, Hugh, it was really quite amazing. On the debate stage, Donald Trump said, well, I do think Planned Parenthood does wonderful, wonderful things. Now, no one is actually pro-life would say that. Planned Parenthood is the largest abortionist in the country. And what he had just accused me of being a liar for saying, he said right there on national television in the debate.
Mark Thiessen was a speechwriter for President George W. Bush, which gives him a unique understanding of presidential politics. He spoke with my friend and colleague, Bill Bennett.
Comments on Nevada. Trump won like 45%.
Yep, big night for Donald Trump. I mean, he exceeded his polls. Polls had him in, you know, the high 30s, low 40s, and he got 46%. So that is a huge win for Donald Trump. He got 34,531 votes, which is more than the entire GOP caucus turnout in 2012, which was 33,000. So
really?
that's a big number. However, let's put that in perspective. 34,000 votes in South Carolina. Ben Carson came in fifth, and last place with 53,000 votes all by himself. So you're talking a very tiny sliver of even the GOP electorate. There are about 425,000 eligible GOP voters. So you're talking about a tiny minority within the minority of the GOP that is deciding this, and Trump won them. He clearly turned out a lot of enthusiasm, so it's a good measure of enthusiasm, but we're talking a very, very, very small number. I mean, South Carolina, 740,000 people voted, in Nevada, 75,000 people voted. So this is important in the sense of momentum, but in terms of raw votes, right. it was a very, very tiny contest.
A few scenarios, a few things that have come up lately. We talked to Paul Kangor yesterday. He said Rubio and Cruz have to have a truce and have to agree to join forces, and whoever has the most primary voters at the middle of March or end of March or April leads the ticket, and the other one is the vice president. Cruz, Rubio combined beat Trump.
That's one scenario, sure.
Plausible.
There are some people who are, sorry?
Plausible.
It's possible. They seem to have been pretty nasty to each other, so I don't know that there's a lot of love lost between the two of them. And you know, choosing your vice president is about more than just whether you know pure electoral numbers. If it was, then Dick Cheney would have never been the vice president of the United States.
Sure.
So,
right.
You know, there are some people who are suggesting that Rubio ought to join forces with Kasich and get mm-hmm. Kasich out of the race and offer him the vice presidency. And there's some merit to that. I'll tell you from a pure electoral standpoint, when I was in Iowa with Fox, I was talking to a Democratic strategist there who said, this person, I won't name him, but said to me, we can beat Ted Cruz, we can beat Donald Trump, we can beat Bush, we can beat Kasich, we can't beat Marco Rubio. And he said, I'll never say that on the air, but that's a fact. And if you look at Rubio's speech in South Carolina, where he pointed to, you know, Nikki Haley, the daughter of Indian immigrants, and Tim Scott, the African-American, and then him, a Hispanic, and he said, we're the children of the Reagan Revolution, and we're seizing the mantle. If I was Hillary Clinton, I would have looked at that. At that stage, and say, please don't put those people up against me.
No, it's very appealing.
That's the most terrifying view for the Democrats.
But he's, you know, if he doesn't make a deal with Cruz of the sort I just described, which I think is unlikely, how does he do it? How does he break out? He's way behind.
Well, I don't think in every state Donald Trump's going to win 46% of the vote. And I mean, this is a high watermark for him in a very, very tiny electorate. So in Nevada, enthusiasm can make a difference because it's a caucus state. So you have, you know, again, he won 34,000 votes in Nevada. There are 425,000 GOP voters in Nevada. So he won 46% of a minority of a small minority of the GOP electorate.
All right.
That doesn't take anything away from his victory, but in primary states, he's not running away with 46%. If he was doing that everywhere, then I'd say it's over.
Coming up, Michael Medved issues a challenge to Trump supporters.
Tell me what I should expect if your dream comes true and there's a Trump presidency.
The Town Hall Review continues in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Mark Davis, filling in for Hugh Hewitt. Donald Trump believes the Republican establishment is not on his side. You can understand why they're nervous. Trump has vilified nearly every concept that the usual power brokers rely on. And that establishment, a word we've heard a lot in recent weeks, finds it hard to believe that he can actually win a general election. Weekly Standard editor Bill Kristol joined Morning in America's Bill Bennett.
Do you think Rubio is the best bet to beat Hillary Clinton?
Probably. I think that's what the polling suggests. I think Ted Cruz shouldn't be underrated. He's a little tougher sell, but he's also a tough guy. And
okay.
Could be a very strong general election candidate, a good debater, I think.
Yeah, very good debater. And Trump, Hillary.
I'm pretty skeptical about Trump's chances. I just think, in general, I mean, he has shown some ability to appeal to independents, obviously, at this point, but I just think a lot of voters, when they really think hard about it, will think he's just not the right guy to be president. So I'm very pessimistic about Trump's chances to beat Hillary.
Those numbers are still large, aren't they? At least the person they'd least like to see.
Right. Hillary's are, too. That's the great irony. The parties could end up nominating the two people, this has never happened before, I think, who are, you know, obviously have strong support among chunks of their own parties, but are among the general electorate are pretty highly negative. I mean, in terms of favorable and unfavorable, usually you nominate someone who's at least somewhat, you know, favorable to the general electorate, then their numbers get knocked down during the campaign. This is all the negative advertising. But like in 2008, Obama and McCain were both some, you know, 50 to 35 kind of thing among the general electorate when they got nominated, both Hillary and Trump would be underwater. It would be kind of a bizarre campaign, which is why I do think Bloomberg could run as an independent and others might look at it. It could be a very, very, very wild roller coaster over the next few months.
Keith would like to respond. Keith is in Atlanta. Go ahead. Keith, you're on with Bill Kristol and Bill Bennett.
Good morning, Mr. Kristol.
And
I was at a Trump rally in Atlanta yesterday. And, Mr. Kristol, what you guys are not understanding and you're not getting is that you sold us John McCain. You sold us Mitt Romney. We are not listening to you guys this year. We are tone deaf with what you guys have to say. That rally yesterday in Atlanta, as I'm speaking about that rally and listening to Donald Trump, I'm getting goosebumps. The electricity, the energy, the power that this guy possessed, and we believe with all our heart that he is going to make America great again.
Okay.
I'm a black man, and a lot of things people don't realize, and the media don't show it. There were a lot of black people at that rally yesterday.
Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I mean, the voters selected McCain and Romney. I had my doubts about both, especially Romney. I probably was more critical of them than almost anyone else in the sort of mainstream commentator class. But people are entitled to be for whoever they want to be for. I don't think you should be for someone because he gives you goosebumps or because you're frustrated by the preceding two candidates. I think you should be for someone if you think he could be a good president. And sometimes getting all excited and having goosebumps is actually something that should make you step back and say, wait a second, who's the last candidate? Who's the last presidential candidate who gave millions of Americans goosebumps? Barack Obama. And I do think in many ways Trump is the Republican Obama.
Donald Trump has so far declined to go on the Michael Medved show. That would be interesting because Michael has some questions for Mr. Trump.
The other thing about Mr. Trump for just a moment that I think is so lamentable is that he really does treat the campaign as a game. Whenever anybody wants to talk about substance, all he wants to talk about is how he's winning. And I would put this out there for those of you who are Trump supporters. I know. He's wonderful. He's winning. He's so magical. He's so terrific. Tell me what I should expect if your dream comes true and there's a Trump presidency. What do you think the first thing that he's going to accomplish is going to be? I mean, really, and what a first couple of things. I understand he's going to make America great again. How? Remember the other day we played you an excerpt of the interview that was a town hall meeting that Anderson Cooper was doing on CNN with all of the Republican candidates. They did three on a Wednesday night and three on a Thursday night. When he interviewed Donald Trump, Trump kind of made a surprising remark about Obamacare and the mandate, because the mandate, which most of us believe is unconstitutional, is something Donald Trump just loves. Listen.
Why would insurance company not have a pre-existing, insure somebody?
Well, I like the mandate. Conditions? Okay, so here's where I'm a little bit different. I don't want people dying on the streets. And I say this all the time.
Sir, what did you mean when you said, I like the mandate?
This is Jake Tapper.
Well, what happened is we were talking over each other, and it wasn't Anderson's fault because I think Anderson is terrific. I thought he did a fan. I thought it was a great evening, and we got tremendous reviews on it. They got tremendous ratings, which is always nice, too. But what I'm talking about is very simple. There's no mandate, no mandatory anything. We're going to end Obamacare. We're going to terminate. It's going to be repealed. It's going to be replaced by something much better. First of all, we have to get rid of the lines between the states so there's competition, okay? We have to. And we'll go health care savings accounts. We have there's many different ways. We're going to get great health care. You're going to have your own doctor, which people don't have, even though Obama promised. You're going to have your own plan. And we're going to have great health care. The one thing I say is this. Call it whatever you want. People are not going to die in the middle of a street.
Where are they dying on the streets
now? Absolutely no money and they're sick. They're not dying on the sidewalks and they're not dying on the streets if I'm president. They're just not. And as a Republican, a lot of people would say, oh, that's a terrible thing to say as a Republican. Let me tell you, every time I mention it, you know I have the biggest crowds, far bigger than Bernie. Bernie's second, I will say, but I have far bigger than Bernie.
Wow.
I'll make a speech in front of 20,000 people and I'll say we cannot allow people on my watch or any watch to die in the middle of a street or a sidewalk because they have absolutely no money. We'll get him to a hospital. We'll get him to a doctor. We have to take care of him.
He'll
I get
standing
ovations
his White House
when
storm
I say
troopers?
That from Republicans. Mm-hmm. And then somebody will say, he's not a conservative to say that. So you can call it whatever you want. I don't like the term mandate personally because that sort of means mandatory.
Then why did he say he liked the mandate before?
People are not going to die on the streets of any city or of any place if I'm president.
Okay, what is he going to do? Issue an executive order? I mean, this is, you know what it's like? It's like that stupid thing is when I'm president, people say Merry Christmas again. First of all, they say Merry Christmas. And what is he going to do? Issue executive orders about this stuff? Pass legislation? And where exactly are people dying on the street? By the way, what somebody should ask him, you don't think people should die on the streets? Would you treat illegal immigrants in emergency rooms? Or would you let them die on the streets? He said, that's not going to be an issue because we're going to get rid of all of them. We're going to make them all disappear and we're going to deport every one of them. I mean, the incoherence, the lack of seriousness, for God's sake, a president of the United States. I mean, if you look around the world right now and you look at what's going on in Great Britain, they're going to have this huge vote on June 23rd on what's called the Brexit. And it's basically an existential question for the United Kingdom, which is dividing the Conservative Party there. Should Britain leave the European Union or not? And a lot of the most conservative voices in Britain, not including Prime Minister Cameron, who got some concessions from the European Union and wants Britain to stay in the European Union. Okay, this is a very major matter for U.S. policy. It's the future of the world. Does Donald Trump know anything about this?
For more of Michael Medved's Trump talk, go to townhallreview.com. Coming up, a college rejects a conservative speaker.
This is what's amazing is that you and I mean, we pay taxes in the state of California up the wazoo right. So that these spoiled brats don't ever have to be faced with an opposing viewpoint.
The Town Hall Review continues in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Mark Davis in for Hugh Hewitt. Conservative writer and fellow Salem host Ben Shapiro was scheduled to speak at California State University, Los Angeles on Thursday. But college campuses have become the left-wing equivalent of a cultish compound. No outside thoughts are welcome, and if they arise, they will forcibly be shown the door. The president of the university disinvited the co-host of the Morning Answer program on my sister station in Los Angeles. Dennis Prager spoke with Ben Shapiro.
So you were invited by whom?
By a student group, student affiliate of Young America's Foundation. So, you know, a few students there decided to invite me, sponsored by Young America's Foundation. They got it cleared by the university. They got it cleared
by
the student body.
Hold on. I want to go step by step. Is the Young America's Foundation one of these accredited student groups?
Yes, they are, I believe.
Now, does the university have to okay every speaker?
So the university does have to okay the speakers who come on campus because of security arrangements. So, you know, the cops have to show up usually, and especially when someone conservative shows up, there are threats. There are, in this case, two particular professors, one of whom threatened the students with physical violence if they went. He said he challenged them to wrestle him in open gym. He said, "I lift, bro," and he challenged them to wrestle him. Another one of the professors is a Black Lives Matter activist who said that she wanted to do something about it and encouraged her students to do something about the lecture, to which one of the students apparently responded with threats of physical violence against me personally. So all of this happens.
Are you loath to name the professors?
No, I'm happy to name the professors. The first one is a guy named Robert Wide. And the second one...
Well, what is it? What department is he in?
I think he's a sociology professor, of course.
That's a shock.
Of
okay.
course.
So he said that if you come... I didn't quite follow.
He said that the white supremacists who invited me...
I see.
He challenged them. He says, if you want to fight someone your own size...
Is he white or black?
I believe he's white.
Right. So he thinks that the Young Americans Foundation are white supremacists.
And I'm a white supremacist.
And you're a white supremist.
Our big thing is wearing yarmulkes. That's our big thing. You know?
Well, no. The Orthodox Jewish membership in white supremacist organization is known.
Enormous.
Yes, exactly. Right. Because white supremacists love Orthodox Jews.
We're their favorite people.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So...
Okay.
He wants to.
And then there was a Black Lives Matter female. What department does she?
I believe that she's an African American studies professor.
Another shock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what is her name?
Malina Abdullah.
Marina Abdullah.
Most well known for her hashtag. I think it's abolish the police.
So really?
Yes. So that
would save a lot of black lives.
Oh, yeah.
If we abolish the police.
For sure. So she posted on her Facebook, quote, "I say this event is a problem. What we gun do, y'all?" And I pronounce it like that because it's spelled G-O apostrophe N, and then y'all as in Y apostrophe
right.
A-L-L.
Yes.
And one of
all
her
right,
commenters well, so, replied with a threat of physical violence against me. So.
Oh, really? Okay. So was it on the basis of threats to you that the president of Cal State L.A.? Canceled
no.
you?
No. So his name is William Covino, and last night he wrote a letter to Young America's Foundation, and here's what he wrote, quote, "After careful consideration, I have decided that it will be best for our campus community if we reschedule Ben Shapiro's appearance for a later date so that we can arrange for him to appear as part of a group of speakers with differing viewpoints on diversity. Such an event will better represent our university's dedication to the free exchange of ideas and the value of considering multiple viewpoints."
Mm-hmm. Which, of course, I suspect he does whenever a speaker from the left shows up.
Right.
I insists mean, that there be conservative voices.
Always. Cornel West, by the way, has spoken there.
Uh-huh.
Angela Davis has spoken there.
Who says she's a communist.
Right. And was a terrorist. Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No problem.
But nobody had to appear in those cases. So it's a lie.
Right.
So the president of...
It's also illegal. I mean, this is viewpoint discrimination. It's illegal under the First Amendment.
At a public university.
At a public university for a pre-approved speech, there has to be a policy of viewpoint neutrality.
Well, my worry is that other cowards, which is synonymous with college administrators, and it has been since my time. I have said this since I was in graduate school. They caved into every left-wing demand. Left-wingers would trash the professors' classrooms and their studies, and it wouldn't matter. They took over offices. This is now 40 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What you are enduring is not new. It's just worse than ever.
Well, because the people who are in charge are the protesters.
That's exactly right. So here's my fear that the other cowards, a.k.a. College administrators and presidents and deans, will say, oh, okay, now we'll learn from Cal State L.A. We won't allow them to begin with.
Right. And I think that that's probably what will start to happen. They'll start making excuses. It won't be based on viewpoint. They'll make excuses about we can't afford it or whatever other excuses they make. If this happens, then the amount of damages I'll sue the university for is, listen, my taxes go to that university, so I'll be paying myself, right? I'll be paying the taxes that pay my own settlement, presumably. But this is what's amazing, is that you and I mean, we pay taxes in the state of California up the wazoo,
right,
so that these spoiled brats don't ever have to be faced with an opposing viewpoint.
Coming up, Obama is determined to close Gitmo.
Once these terrorists are inside the United States, then they are within the jurisdiction of the U.S. courts for all purposes.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Mark Davis, filling in for Hugh Hewitt. So President Obama has promised to close Guantanamo Bay. Not a particularly big surprise. He's promised to do this many times before, starting in 2008. But his presidency is winding down, and this is a promise many believe he intends to keep, albeit very, very late. Salem host Mike Gallagher brought in attorney Andrew McCarthy, who has written several books related to the threat of Islamist terror.
I'm just trying to get some great analysis on Obama's announcement that it's time to fulfill his campaign promise from 2008. I thought it was really great to hear him being frugal and worrying about the cost of Guantanamo Bay. I mean, it's very, very expensive. Of course, it'll be real cheap to have to overhaul some penitentiary in the United States and make it ready for terrorists, right? That won't cost too much.
No, of course not. You know, when President Obama's down to arguing that it's going to save money, you know that he's not serious.
Thank you.
Because that's never been a concern of his. You know, it's the same case, Mike, that he's been making from the first day. And it's built on one fiction after another, beginning with the cockamamie idea that Guantanamo Bay causes terrorist recruitment.
Right,
that it's
right.
A big recruitment tool. I
consistently have pointed out for 7 years now, I prosecuted one of the worst terrorists on the planet. He got the gold-plated civilian trial. He's in the nice civilian prison.
Right, and they're not mad at us for him being in prison, right? They like us now, right?
Right. Mass murder attacks have been committed, including one in Luxor in Egypt in the 1990s, where 64 people were slaughtered in order to try to get him released.
Right. They don't care where we house terrorists.
Right. As this whole idea that the jihadists are out there and they're parsing the niceties of American constitutional law and who's subject to military detention and who's subject to detention in civilian courts is a fantasy of the left because they care about it.
Right.
Jihadists only care that we hold jihadists.
But why do they care about it, Andy? When Obama says this is contrary to our values, gosh, I wish I could get inside his brain and know what he means. Why don't you decipher that or interpret that for me?
Well, I think when Obama talks about values, he's talking about his policy preferences, whereas, if you want to talk about American constitutional governance, we don't talk about values. We talk about principles.
Right.
Principles are what we're built on. Values are what you like. And, when Obama's talking about values, he's talking about what he likes. One of
right.
the things he doesn't like is military detention without trial, even though it's been authorized under the laws of war for longer than there have been United States. And, one of the things that I'm very concerned about, and this continues to be a problem no matter how many times he, misrepresents the case, once these terrorists are inside the United States, then they are within the jurisdiction of the U.S. courts for all purposes. There's not even a debate about that.
Right, and is that part of his end game?
Well, what happens, my question is, what happens if you get a federal judge, of which there is more than one, who are just as hostile as Obama is to the mm-hmm. notion of detention without trial?
Exactly.
Besides that those people have to be released if we can't try them. And, of course, if we could have tried them, we would have tried them by now.
Right.
Holding them for over a decade.
Where does Andy McCarthy's gut tell him these terror suspects and detainees will wind up if Obama gets his way?
That they'll go to supermax prisons and high security prisons, which is where we're holding terrorists now. There's no question that we have facilities that you could put the terrorists in. And frankly, Mike, Obama has released so many terrorists who shouldn't have been released. We're now down to something I think well under 100 people. So,
right.
it's probably not a credible argument for someone like me to make anymore that we couldn't put them in federal prisons and have them not be able to escape. But
right.
that's never been the issue in the first place. We've had Al-Qaeda prisoners in those prisons for years, and we've had some really terrible escape attempts, including
right.
one in which a federal, you may remember Officer Pepe, a federal Bureau of Prisons officer who got stabbed in the eye
mm-hmm.
and was blinded in an Al-Qaeda escape attempt in New York. It's never, they misrepresent all the issues here. It's never been a question that we think that they'll escape, but you can't stop the guys on the outside from trying to help them escape, which has happened before. You can't stop them from planning attacks, which they've done before, and there's a record of that. And this whole idea that the civilian system works because we managed to convict somebody misses the point. It's
right.
never been a question. The weakness of the civilian system has never been our inability to convict people within the bounds of due process rules. It's been the lunacy of giving grade A due process to enemy combatants in wartime and giving them the intelligence in our files that you have to do in order to comply with civilian discovery so that they can learn to kill us more efficiently.
I really appreciate what you've written in the past. Back to this issue of Gitmo as a recruitment tool. You've said a big factor, a big driver, if you will, of terror recruitment is the perception that the jihadists are winning. And so for the president of the United States to say, oh, my goodness, having these jihadists in at Gitmo is contrary to our values, telling the world that this is contrary to what we should be thinking, that's a terrorist tool. That's a recruitment tool. And the fact of the matter is, this move, backs the jihadists.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And I'll tell you what, Mike, I would, as opposed as I am to it, I would negotiate with President Obama about closing Guantanamo Bay if I thought that from his side of the equation, what he would do would be to authorize and bolster the idea of detaining people without trial under the laws of war so that mm-hmm. we can interrogate them and replenish our intelligence base. The way the Obama administration's treated this issue from the beginning, now they've so screwed up how difficult it is to detain people
right.
that when we have a choice between capturing and killing somebody who might be a good intelligence source, we kill them.
Coming up.
I have never encountered that in my life in American politics. This is new, where you are not responsible for what you say.
Dennis Prager returns for the final segment of the Town Hall Review. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Mark Davis, filling in for Hugh Hewitt. If you've watched any of the debates, one thing is clear. Civility is often in short supply. The Trump factor, you could call it, has changed things dramatically. Here's Dennis Prager.
I understand why people have voted for him. I have honored the people who do because I know some and I know you among my audience. But I think it is now time to really ask a question. Am I voting for Trump because I think he is the best man, or am I voting for him because I'm so ticked off at the establishment? Because it makes me feel good to give the middle finger to people that I think have been a failure. That's the question that people have to ask at a given point. Do I do good or do I feel good? He's done a lot of terrible things. He said a lot of terrible things, and I don't know exactly what it is that one processes in order to continue to support him. There are people who wrote to me that after what he said, there are people who called the show, and I've taken every Trump supporter that I could because I want to give you time. But there was a woman who said she was a Trump supporter till his comments on George W. Bush, that finally was over the top for her, and it was over the top. I thought his John McCain comments were over the top. I thought his statement that the United States kills people too, so why blame Putin for the killing of Russian journalists who oppose him? I thought that was over the top. And then afterwards when he's challenged, well, you know, you said, I mean, we have the recording. He said at the last debate that George W. Bush not only lied, but knew that there were no WMD in Iraq. I mean, that's the ultimate lie. In other words, he sent Americans to their deaths. This is what the radical left, this is not even what liberals say, this is what radical leftists say. And I have come to the conclusion, and I believe that an honest Trump supporter would have to acknowledge this. There is essentially nothing he could say or do that would end their support of him. I have never encountered that in my life in American politics. This is new, where you are not responsible for what you say. You can, therefore, you have carte blanche to say anything. You are free to offer almost no policies. You are free to present no advisors on anything because you know so much. I guess Americans find this appealing, where people have this staggering sense of belief in oneself that Barack Obama had and now Donald Trump has. I don't find that appealing. I think self-confidence is great. I have self-confidence, but I have a very strong sense of my limitations. I have a very strong realization that there are people who know more than me.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review. Tell a friend and sign up for a podcast of our program at townhallreview.com. And be sure to follow us now on Twitter @TownHallReview. That's @ Town Hall Review. For executive producer Russell Shubin and producers Charlie Richards and Derek Fowler, I'm Mark Davis. Hugh Hewitt's back next week. Join us again then for another edition of Town Hall Review, the Week in Review program from a perspective you can trust.